Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, the original K-State sports show. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome in here to the Power Cat Podcast. I am Ryan Gilbert. He is Cole Carmody. No Fitz today as the old boss man continues to get well. Cole, we'll have some recruiting here later on, some general football stuff. News of the day, though, Dusty May is out at Michigan. I want to just touch on this, man. I mean, that's I don't think it's going to send the shockwaves, the ripples, as Mike Boynton is going to be the interim, but didn't expect that one to happen. But I guess I've seen on social media that maybe that was kind of the end game at some point for May. But in late June, for a college coach to leave like that, I would not be happy if I'm a Michigan fan.
Think about the rise of Dusty May from when you covered him and when they were playing K-State at Florida Atlantic. I mean, this is a guy who was fairly known, but also I don't think I knew who Dusty May was before the NCAA tournament, at least not as a coach. And then he goes on and makes a national championship game, goes to Michigan, wins a national championship, and now he's headed off to the NBA. It's hard to really blame him for going to Dallas. I mean, you got Cooper Flagg. That's a really talented roster that the Mavs have, but that has to be a tough decision. I thought it was interesting. Everyone says, well, sources around him are saying it's because of the landscape of college sports. And Gilbert, you know this as well as anybody. You know what Michigan did? They bought their entire roster and literally bought a national championship game. We could talk about K-State wanting to try and buy players to the transfer portal to go deep in the NCAA tournament. That's exactly what Michigan did, and it worked for them, so credit to them. But it was just kind of ironic coming from a guy that did that.
Money's always going to talk, though. I mean, he's going to get a pay jump to go to the NBA, and I think Dusty May, from what I've heard, is cut from like the right cloth, but yeah. If that money's there, you know, some coaches, they can't say no to that. Even previously here in Manhattan that we recently saw, money can change people.
Mike Boynton, too. Let's not forget that. I mean, this guy got fired at Oklahoma State, and now he's tasked with trying to keep this thing together at Michigan. I mean, the Wolves are going to be circling the Michigan Wolverines roster right now because that's a really talented group. I know there's some people over at Kansas that are eyeing some guys on the Wolverines roster. We'll see what happens there. But also, if you're a Michigan player, like, what do you do? Do you stay? Do you try and enter the portal? Because since they've announced Mike Boynton as this new coach, there, I believe there's a 15-day window that's open for guys to enter the portal. So it'll be fascinating. And if they leave, how do you build? I mean, this is just going to be a strange time for the entire Michigan basketball program.
I think keeping Mike Boynton around is Michigan's best bet at keeping players. And so I was looking at his record, like I think one winning season in the Big 12 in like 7 years. It's not good, but if you want to keep those players that you did spend a lot of money to go out and get, Mike Boynton, unfortunately, is probably going to be your best option to do that. Because if guys leave, good luck getting people to come in. You know, they've got off-season workouts and stuff well underway here in Manhattan with basketball. But Cole, more football today on the podcast. First from Doug 142, which would make fans feel more like Avery Johnson lived up to expectations, being a Heisman finalist or making the playoffs? It's a good question.
That is a good question. I think for me, it would have to be making the playoff. It's so hard to be a Heisman finalist. I mean, think about all the really, really good players throughout college football that we think, oh, this guy's really good. Think about all the guys we watch, you know, throughout the Big 12 where you're like, he might be one of the best players in the conference and they don't even sniff being a Heisman finalist. So in order to be a Heisman finalist, I think K-State probably has to make the playoff. I don't think that Avery Johnson is a Heisman finalist unless they make the college football playoff. But if they make the college football playoff and he doesn't make it to New York for the Heisman ceremony, I don't think fans are going to be mad. So I think at the end of the day, it comes down to team success. And I mean, he's going to have the records, Ryan. Like, this isn't going to be a guy who is statistically not going to live up to expectations. Whatever you thought Avery Johnson would be coming in from a statistical standpoint, he probably has surpassed that. So I think now you just wait on the team success. And I think we know how difficult it is to get to that point. So if K-State makes a college football playoff with Avery Johnson at quarterback, I think it's hard to say that he didn't live up to expectations.
It's tough for Avery Johnson because his defense isn't going to be terrible, knock on wood, hopefully. And so to get to New York as a Heisman finalist, I just don't see that really happening because this isn't 2011 Baylor with RG3, where you're just living in a shootout game in and game out. Ideally, K-State would like to hold its opponents down, but expectations for 2026, right? That can be different than your expectations when you grabbed Avery Johnson as a high school recruit. Now, I agree, go out and win the Big 12. You might be a Heisman finalist. You might not be, but I think most fans would want that for this upcoming season, all things considered, especially with Colin Klein coming in here. But Cole, think back to when you know you were covering that recruitment. Okay, this is the guy with all the cares. He's a charismatic guy. He's got the swagger. He's got the hair. He's a local in-state guy. One of the highest rated guys to ever come at that time to Kansas mm-hmm. State. And I think I wouldn't say people expected him to be a Heisman winner, but you expected more, I guess, pizzazz out of Avery Johnson. And he's been fine in Manhattan. That's not a knock on him at all, but he's maybe been more steady, maybe more so a guy with a higher floor than a higher ceiling. And coming out of high school, I think most people were expecting the big home run, flashy highlight plays, game in and game out. And you've had some of those, but there's also some games where K-State just goes out, scores 20, 24 points, and you win a normal, clean football game. And so Avery would have to take a huge, huge leap to be a Heisman finalist. But coming out of high school, I think that's what most fans were hoping or were wanting. Now, in the present day, the here and now, you're looking at Avery Johnson just to go out and win games and ultimately lead your team to a playoff because, I mean, you've got to really – something crazy. The defense has to suck or Avery has to be crazy good to be a Heisman finalist.
I think it's all about expectations too. I mean, think about – you talked about coming in. The number one quarterback in that class was Arch Manning. The expectations for him were super, super incredibly high. Texas did not make a college football playoff last year. He redshirted his first year. Everyone seems to think he's, even today, he's God's gift to football. I mean, for Texas fans, is it about Arch Manning making a Heisman ceremony or making the playoff? I think if you were to ask Texas fans, they want to win games. They want to win a national championship. If Arch Manning is good enough to get them to that point, I think they're going to be happy. So, yeah, I think would it be cool if Avery Johnson made a Heisman or if he, a Heisman ceremony, if he made it to New York? Absolutely. But you're right. I mean, it would be very difficult for K-State unless he just puts up monster numbers to make a Heisman ceremony without having a whole lot of team success. Now, with that being said, again, like we've talked about, I think at the end of the day, if K-State makes college football playoff, even if they don't win the Big 12, who cares? Right? Like, it doesn't matter what Avery Johnson does. It doesn't matter what anybody else on the team does. At the end of the day, I think K-State fans will look back fondly on Avery Johnson's career if he can lead them to the college football playoff.
Well, K-State's expected, maybe not expected, but projected. Many think that K-State's going to be real good this year. And so going back to, like I talked about, the defense, Cole, if this team had no business winning 7 or 8 games or more, then go ahead, Avery, and just ball out. But when you have more of a complete team that's going to rise the tide and bring Avery Johnson up, winning a Big 12 title is much more attainable. And so that's what my end answer would be here, Cole. However, as a recruit, I still think that Heisman frontrunner would be what we wished once upon a time.
Yeah. What's interesting is we go back and look at that class. Really, the best quarterback, I think, right now, without a doubt, would be Dante Moore. But a transfer, right? He started at UCLA. Now he's at Oregon. He sat a year. Nico, he started at Tennessee, transferred to UCLA. Arch Manning, we've already talked about it, hasn't fully lived up to those expectations. Sam Levitt was also in that class. He transferred. So there's something to be said about having longevity at a school. I'm not saying that Avery Johnson is the best quarterback in that class, but I think here at the end of the year, when we go back and we look at Avery Johnson's recruiting class and specifically all those quarterbacks, he's going to start to rise to the top and kind of cement himself as having the legacy just by being at one school, which is just something we don't see. And so even if K-State doesn't have the team success, even if Avery doesn't have the personal success, I still think that staying at a school for 4 years in an era like this, winning a lot of games and putting up a lot of numbers should count for something.
From Purple Hokie, at this point in time, who do you think will be the starting 22 players against Nichols and why? Cole, Sorry, Purple Hokie. We should probably do a couple key position battles rather than the all 22. I'm sure that will be coming on Go Power Cat. You did it a couple months back too, right, Cole? I think you did a way too early projections piece on who those starters would be. But your thoughts?
I think running back is the number one place I want to start. That's going to be a spot. I think we've heard some really interesting things throughout the spring, throughout the summer. Jay Harris was brought in from Oregon. It's a guy who started at Northwest Missouri State as a Bearcat, put up a bunch of numbers, transferred to Oregon, didn't play his first year that much. Second year was last year, actually got a start in the College Football Playoff, performed pretty well in the game that Oregon got boat raced by Indiana. They bring him in along with Rodney Fields, who's another guy who, Ryan, I know you just wrote about on the incoming transfers piece, and all that combined with Joe Jackson. I mean, you know, it's hard to say starting 22 because I think there's going to be more than 22 starters. Like, obviously you can only have 11 guys on the field at one time, but I think there's going to be a lot of guys, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that rotate in and out. You know, it remains to be seen what Collins offense looks like, but I don't think you bring in two transfer running backs unless you're going to play three guys. Like, I just don't see a world in which Rodney Fields, who was the leading rusher at Oklahoma State, Jay Harris, who started in a College Football Playoff, and then Joe Jackson, who was really good last year, I don't see a world in which all three of those guys don't play.
Yeah, and we had a conversation on the message boards about this. Like, yes, Rodney Fields probably is not going to be on the field for the very first snap. Tanner Morley will, and so we had him ranked behind Rodney Fields, but just because Rodney Fields is in what we can agree is a better position group doesn't necessarily mean, since he's not a starter, he's not a great player. And so there's some strong position groups, there's some weaker ones. It's all going to fill itself out though. Cole, I was drawing a blank. When was it Avery and Will that were on the field? Or was it Avery and somebody else on the field at the same time?
Last year it was Blake Barnett and Avery Johnson. Had multiple times. And Blake,
you never know what it's going to look like.
No, you have never, no idea. And I think receivers similar to that, like, you know, like Jerron Tibbs and Josh Manning. I think Josh Manning's been from everything I've been told, Josh Manning's been the best wide receiver they have so far. I think those two guys will kind of be on the outside. But like after that, is it Isaiah Williams? Are you going to see some Brandon White, who was brought in from Hawaii? Are you going to see Derek Sally Jr., who was fantastic at Hutch last year? Like, who are you going to see kind of emerge? I'd throw Sterling Lockett into that mix. Who are you going to see kind of emerge as that third receiver? Because I think they feel really good about Tibbs and Manning. But, like, again, it goes back to that. Like, what do the formations look like? Do we see more two tight end sets with Garrett Oakley and Lincoln Kuehr? Like, are there any other tight ends who kind of start to emerge? I think they have a lot of options at the skill position players. So to predict this is going to be the starting, you know, skill position guys for right now at this stage, be more difficult. But Ryan, it'd even be more difficult from the offensive line, because I have no idea who are going to be the first five guys who trot out there against Nichols.
What is your best guess at Colin Klein's record in his first year as a head coach? This comes from Mac90.
Let's go through the schedule, because we're getting to the time of the year, Ryan, where like this is the stuff we do. Like, we like to look here and we like to project. And we like to look and see what games can K-State win? When should they win? If they get rolling, can they get this game? Can they get that game? I think it's pretty fair to say, and you'd probably agree with me, the first three games of the year, they need to win, right? Like, you need to beat Nichols, you need to beat Tulane, and you need to beat Washington State. Or sorry, Nichols, Washington State, Tulane. You need to beat those three teams, because I think Washington State, obviously breaking in a new coach, Nichols, FCS opponent, and then Tulane lost a lot from that group. So I think you feel really good about those first three games. I mean, if you're gonna trip up anywhere, is it Tulane? I mean, I don't know. I think maybe, but it's hard for me to see them dropping any of those first three games.
Yeah, and Washington State plays at Washington, I believe, six days before on a Sunday. So there's no excuse to have any reason to lose that game against Washington State.
And Cincinnati is the first Big 12 game. They don't have a bye after the first three, which, you know, I think we've seen that in the past, not this time. That's going to be a game where I think Cincinnati, who knows what they're going to look like. Scott Satterfield, I think he's on the chopping block. Are they going to play for their coach? They don't exactly have a very easy non-con as well, if I remember correctly. So that's going to be a tough game, obviously a road game, but you feel like if you win that game, you're 4-0. The arrow is pointing up at that point, because then you come home and you do have a bye before you play Houston. And I think that could be huge, because I think Houston's going to be pretty dang good this year. I don't know how good they're going to be, but you get them at home, which I think you feel good about. And then you get KU at home, which you have to feel really good about regardless. The one stretch where I look at and say this could be difficult would be at Arizona State and at Colorado in back-to-back weeks, followed up with Oklahoma State at home. I don't really know how good any of those teams are going to be, but you start to go through the schedule and you're like, I don't see any games where it's like this game is going to be really tough. Like, you feel like K-State, maybe they're not favored in every single game, but they're definitely a single-digit underdog, if that. Like, I don't know. It just, the schedule is really, really favorable.
Yeah. Go open up your sportsbook app on your phone, and the odds to win the Big 12. The top three teams, K-State avoids. Bottom three teams, K-State gets. So schedule lines up really nicely, and I agree wholeheartedly that that has a huge impact on how many games you can win. I do want to take a jab at Colin Klein coming in and replacing Chris Kleiman. And Chris Kleiman didn't necessarily have the best year last year, Cole, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't dysfunctional. It was miles different from the way Jerome Tang went out. Mm-hmm. Colin Klein's picking up, keeping the torch lit, right? The starting quarterback. There's a number of starters, whoever those 22 guys may be, that come back. And Colin Klein is, I wouldn't say changing the culture, Cole. He's pushing it in a different angle. Mm-hmm. Right, pushing it a new direction, giving it a new life, but you're not having to wipe away anything, and you're certainly not having to start from day one from scratch. You're keeping what Chris Kleiman had going. Heck, Chris Kleiman is still around the program.
Yeah,
as a help me out here with the role,
like advisor.
But he's around. So that plays a big part in it. So no one's gonna feel sorry for Colin Klein or anybody if Kansas State doesn't go out and win, however many games you think they should win. You know, there is no excuse with the NIL available, the coaching staff, the recruiting stuff. They're pulling out all the stops on the recruiting trail. The bar has been raised. And so most first-year head coaches, Casey Alexander with basketball, so long as there's light at the end of the tunnel, every rational fan is going to give you time to work that out and let things fall into place. But with football, not only is it, I wouldn't say easier for this program to reload than basketball, but you didn't have to necessarily reload. Go and look at the starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're good. Yeah. Most important position in all of sport.
And I think conference too, like your schedule is not the same.
That's right? A very good point.
In basketball, you're going through the gauntlet and having to play basically the same teams everybody else. And in football, it doesn't work out that way. I do want, before we go to the next question, we haven't really answered this. So floor and ceiling, I'll ask you this. What's given the schedule? I mean, that's a very realistic question. I think everybody would have said last year the floor would have been 6-6. That's what they hit, right? So what is the floor and what is the ceiling, do you think, with the schedule?
I feel very homerish for saying this, but 8 wins as a floor doesn't sound wild at all when you consider that non-conference, Kansas State should be 3-0. At that point, just go 5-4. I mean, Cole, last season compared to this season, which team's going to be better? Obviously, this one, K-State had a winning record in Big 12 play last year at 5-4. And so for this team to do that and avoid some slip-ups in the non-con, it's crazy to say 8 wins is a floor, but Kansas State has no reason not to go out and win the games that it is supposed to win. If there was one knock on Chris Kleiman's career in Manhattan, Cole, it was the one or twice per year blunder against Tulane and Manhattan at Houston when they weren't good. Go down the line. And so ceiling, I'm not sure. I guess 10, right? Go win a couple more games, and anything that happens after that, you're pleased. What about you, man?
Looking back on the schedule last year, like we should have maybe not seen this coming, but I think the floor should have been the 6-6. You know, like, honestly, you look at Army, they won 10 games the year before. You know, you look at the Iowa State, was a really good football team. They obviously lost that game in Ireland. And so Arizona
did not have a lingering effect, did it?
right? And even Arizona, like that's a Big 12 opponent compared to Washington State, who is not even remotely in the same class as an Arizona. I mean, I feel very confident in saying that Arizona was bad the year before, but you were going on the road and you were still playing a Big 12 team. So that was always going to be on the table. So I think looking back on it, we probably should have given that schedule a little bit more than what we probably did at the time. And I feel fine saying that now, but yeah. As far as you're right, like it would be incredibly disappointing not to start 3-0, like point blank period. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. If last year's team can go 5-4 in the Big 12 with what we assume to be a tougher schedule, I think I'm with you. I think 8-4 is probably the floor. I think 7-5 is the very bottom floor, just in case, you know, Oklahoma State maybe is better than we think. TCU is better than we think. Maybe Colorado has an uptick. Arizona State is maybe a little better than we think they're going to be. Like, that's always going to happen. So I would say 7-5 maybe would be the floor. Also, you're breaking in a first-year head coach. So I think that's probably the absolute floor, but I don't see any reason why the ceiling couldn't be 10 wins, couldn't be 11 wins. Like, I don't think they're going to run the table. That'd be a lot to predict. But you're right. They don't play Texas Tech. They don't play BYU. Like, those are going to be two of the best teams in the Big 12. And they don't play Utah either. So the floor is, it seems very silly to say this, but like, the floor is kind of low, but the ceiling is even higher. Like, that's just kind of how I feel about this group.
I'm not sure how you feel about when you came back from Dublin, but for me, all I could think about was get through the next two games. And then I guess the last non-conference game would have been Arizona. Get through those next 3 weeks and then like just enjoy a bye week, because long trip overseas, long flight back. Like, for me personally, that was what was on my mind. Mm-hmm. Just kind of get through this and then get into the groove of the season. Imagine how a coaching staff and a group of players were feeling, especially after such a defeating loss. And so even if for some reason, case they lose to the Nichols or something happens in the non-conference, you kind of just get right back to it. And your bye week is probably earlier, Cole, than you might want. I think most coaches prefer that a little later in the season. But other than that, it's a very normal looking schedule. And last seasons with three bye weeks was anything but.
And a Friday night game.
Yeah, that was Arizona, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a weird schedule last year. It's funny. I was going through the schedule recently. I'm like, okay, Saturday, all Saturday games, mm-hmm. one bye week. Okay. Sounds great. Like, it feels like college football.
Four games in 27 days to open up last year, right?
Yeah.
With one of them being halfway across the world.
August 16th. Was that kickoff last year? Something ridiculous.
I want to say the 23rd. I want to say the 16th is when 23rd. I went out there.
Okay. Yeah. But still.
This is wild. I keep forgetting the fact that our summer is so much longer this year, Cole.
Yep.
September 5th compared to all that jazz last year.
Oh,
there's a lot more time on our hands this summer.
Absolutely.
All right, man. I don't know, football and basketball. And there's also Coach Mitty on the women's side here. We can do all sports. I'll talk basketball here, though, Cole. Maybe you can do football. From TMAC77, Coach Mitty made the comment in an interview that the 5-for-5 rule would pass. What effect will that have on K-State football and basketball teams? And, you know, with hoops, Casey Alexander definitely wants to build a program and have roster retention, guys come back and recruit the high school ranks. I think it was Sean Rutiliano on our show last week. Maybe it was Alexander from a different appearance, but at least one or two guys every year from the high school ranks mm-hmm. is what they want to do. It's not going to be any easier if there's a 5-for-5 rule in place. Now, shove that aside. I think it's great. Get rid of the redshirt crap and just make it simple. That's pretty self-explanatory, but for just the basketball approach, you're going to have less and less players who are going to be willing to sit back. Now, I'm not here to say that Devin Hutcherson or Jalen Alexander as true freshmen here this season will start or they'll ride the bench. That's going to play itself out, but there's going to be less of those guys that out there available when you're going to have, imagine Jaden Shute and Brendan Reichsteiner, some seniors coming in for yet another year next year, that's going to be saturated throughout all of college sports. You're going to have just less playing time available for the young, unproven freshmen. And so it's just maybe another hurdle that you have to jump through. But Casey Alexander's I did this on a daily delivery the other day. Stay true to your plan and continue to get the right high school players. You know, there's going to be less of them out there, Cole, but just stay to your plan. Stick to your guns to what got you to this point. Get the right guys who are going to be happy to redshirt or maybe take a reduction in minutes early on in their career. Those are the types of players that you want to get. And as long as you don't venture off from that, it shouldn't affect you too much. It's just, bluntly put, going to be maybe a little bit harder if it does come into fruition.
Yeah, and I think the missing part of this is the transfer rule. So, I mean, this Save College Sports Act that's trying to be passed through Congress, one of the things that's a part of it, the 5-for-5 is separate with that, but one of the things that's a part of that is the transfer rules. And so if this were to be passed, you could transfer one time. I think it was unless your coach decides to leave. You could only transfer. Yeah, right, exactly. But you could only transfer one time. And so I think if the 5-for-5 is put into place and that rule is in, then it maybe does limit the, I don't want to say saturation, like you said, but there are still opportunities for freshmen, right? Because you're not going to want to leave after your first year. If I don't play my first year, I'm not just going to get into the portal. I'm not going to go from K-State to McNeese to Louisiana Tech to, you know, Houston, and there I've made it full circle, right? Like, that's not going to happen. I'm probably going to stay at K-State for a little bit longer. And maybe after my third year, if I feel like I'm not going to really do anything, then you'll leave. I think what you'll start to see is more guys take the Taj Manning approach, you know, stay for four years, realize, okay, well, you know, this isn't really working, or I want to go somewhere else for my last year. So I'm going to enter the portal. I think you'll see that happen a lot more across football and basketball. And so it'll just be interesting to see, because I agree with Coach Mitty. I do think this will pass. As it relates to K-State football, the one big one is Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson, if this passes, could hypothetically come back for his fifth year. Would he want to do that? Maybe. I mean, why not? Would you want to hang out with Colin Klein for one more year, become the, you know, undisputed king of records at K-State? What if K-State has a big run in the college football playoff this year? You know, does he want to come back and try and do that again? Or does he want to say, I'm going to test my luck and go to the NFL? I don't know, but I do know the NFL likes to get quarterbacks when they're old. And so that, as far as K-State football, I think that's the biggest storyline to watch out for is what does a guy like Avery Johnson decide to do? Maybe even a guy like Garrett Oakley. But I believe he actually already used his redshirt, so it really wouldn't matter. So Avery is really the big one to watch as far as K-State football. But yeah, it's an interesting rule, and it's going to be one that I think has a pretty big effect on the entire athletic department.
You see me smiling here, Cole?
I do.
Remember the controversy, whether you want to be on this side or this side, when Avery burned that red shirt as a freshman?
Yep.
For it to not even matter.
It'd be hilarious.
It's fifth year.
Yeah.
Would be a pretty funny thing. But basketball, I want to go back to, you mentioned a good point. This probably doesn't matter with Casey Alexander, to be honest with you, but for Jerome Tang, for example, you're not going out and getting PJ Haggerty with that money, knowing he's going to be around for 1 year, right? And I think in your right state of mind, you knew Haggerty wasn't going to be a cat this next season if Tang were to be retained. And so it would change the way you build that roster. And it would be awesome for college sports, man, to get back to what we all want, like the Frank Martin days of building a program and a culture, and these guys are truly brothers and they're not just a collection of players for a year. You know, this probably doesn't mean much to Casey Alexander, because that was, or I guess this is his plan all along. And like I keep saying, if he doesn't venture off of that, he's going to be just fine. And you know what? Maybe it helps for a guy to know that he can't transfer out immediately. I mean, he can, but you're taking kind of a risk that your next stop is going to be the one. But still, early on, you know, there's going to be less minutes to go around for younger guys when there are older guys. But not a bad thing.
If you want to build a program, that's how you do it. I think that's where it would benefit K-State, and that's where it would benefit Casey Alexander. To your point, like, they're not going to go out and try and spend super high dollar on these, you know, 1 year impact transfers. Build a program. And guess what? If you do that, you get to keep him for an extra year. So I'm right there with you. I think it could actually benefit the basketball program a lot.
Mr. Carmody, Last two questions are all you. I'm going to sit back and let you do your thing. These are both recruiting questions from PMath41. Which position groups are you most excited about in the 2027 class?
Well, this is a good question. I think the secondary, that's probably the one that I look at. Joshua Villamil, Josiah Villamil, who's currently on K-State's roster, his brother committed to K-State not too long ago. He's a top 200 recruit in the country. So I would say the secondary, specifically Joshua Villamil, it's a guy I think could be an NFL cornerback one day. He is a stud, 6'1", 185 pounds. Cooper Omot from Great Bend, another four-star guy who K-State was able to bring in. I mean, just those two guys alone, it's hard to say any other position group than the secondary because you got two four-star guys in the secondary. And, you know, anytime you have athletes like that on the edge, it helps. So I would say that the secondary is a spot that K-State's doing a really good job at. But also, I'll just say the defense. I know that's kind of cheating, but Jordan Peterson has been fantastic. And Gilbert, you've had a chance to be around him. It should come as no surprise that people want to play for him because he just seems like, I mean, I haven't had a chance to really interact with him much in person, but he just seems like incredibly charismatic and just a guy who just wants to go get after. He just seems like a football coach.
Which coach on this staff would you not? I mean, they're all in, not to take anything away from Jordan Peterson, but
yeah.
And not to take a shot at Chris Klieman or his assistants. Well, maybe some. And I think a certain coordinator of a third phase of the game has caught his fair share of heat on Go Power Cat over the last couple of years. But you get the point here. This isn't a knock on them. You know, these guys are just living, breathing, and dying football. And I think that the best way to see that, maybe not see, but you know, if you're following along on Go Power Cat, what's happening on the recruiting trail is happening behind closed doors. The stuff that we maybe don't see or get access to, that's how the standard's been, right?
What I'm interested in is, can they continue this?
Yeah.
Like that, and what does this mean? Like, we saw Jerome Tang bring in fantastic, we saw Jerome Tang bring in fantastic recruiting classes through the transfer portal. And usually if a team can convince kids to come play, like if you're a good recruiter, there's a good chance you're a good coach, right? Like that's just kind of how it works. If you're not a good recruiter, you can still be a good coach. But usually if you're a good recruiter, you're a good coach. So, I mean, you'd like to think that K-State has a staff that can get it done, but now can they back it up on the field? Because if they can, then it really starts to get scary. What they're doing right now in 27 could be nothing compared to what they can do in 28, because 2028 has a fantastic in-state group. They're going to have multiple guys who are 4- and 5-star kids who are already at that point. And so, I mean, just there you go. There's your base. If K-State can lock down the state, you have a fantastic base and they continue to do what they're doing nationally, then you're looking at a top 25 class in 2028. And I mean, if they win, who's to say they can't get any higher? So yeah, I mean, if they win, like this is going to be a juggernaut of a recruiting department, which is not something we've seen at K-State ever.
Yeah. We get that a lot. I think last year with what does this game in Ireland mean? And we get that every offseason about something general like that. Well, winning at the end of the day is what can build and snowball and bring better recruiting classes, better fan engagement, better everything, better national exposure. So just win, baby. Al Davis said it best.
That's all you got to do.
From Catmania, to wrap us up, which players from the high school ranks, high school and JUCO ranks, not portal guys, in the 2026 class, do you think will have an immediate impact this year? And what do you think that impact will be?
Good question. He said not JUCO ranks. No, not portal ranks.
Yeah, not portal guys.
I think Derek Sally is the one. We kind of talked about him already. That's going to be the one guy, the junior college receiver out of Hutchinson. That's going to be a guy I think can play for K-State right away. I don't know if he'll start, but he'll kind of be like a jump ball specialist. That's kind of how I see him. He was the number 8 junior college player in the country. It's like, this was a really good get for K-State. Let's not forget that. Another guy I think who's going to play is MJ Graham. He was also a Hutchinson Community College product. I've heard good things about him in the secondary. He was the number 41 player in the country in JUCO. Believe it or not, I do think that K-State could see an offensive lineman crack the rotation this year. Oliver Miller has been fantastic, especially if the tackle depth continues to just, I don't want to say struggle, but if there are injuries that pop up, Oliver Miller, this is a guy who Ohio State was kicking the tires on at the end of the cycle, and K-State with an assist from Taylor Bratt was able to secure that signing. So I think that those would be the three guys I would look at, but I mean, it's anybody's guess really. Like what we thought these guys would do with the old staff versus what the new staff plans to do, like these guys could be here for a year and then they could be gone because these are not the guys who, you know, the staff recruited. So it'll just be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't have a good grip on it because again, these weren't the guys that they handpicked. Like they signed and obviously they kept some guys. They let some guys go who they didn't want to keep. But as who's actually going to play, like, I don't know if I see a lot of super early contributors in this group from the high school ranks. And I mean, that's not a bad thing if we're being honest.
Hopefully everybody enjoyed some youthfulness, some hair, right? Some good looks, something you're not used to when Fitz does these shows. But Cole, I appreciate you hopping on, man.
Hey, also, we're wearing the same shirt. Yeah. So this was not planned, by the way. We both were just lazy and wanted to wear a t-shirt.
Yeah. Hopefully Fitz doesn't yell at me for not wearing the collared up polo. I'll do next time, Fitz. Appreciate you guys tuning in. You'll see my face next on this YouTube channel on Friday as I have a chat with Luke Smith, K-State men's basketball assistant, fighting ever fighting. Be sure to tune into that, but we'll talk to you guys real soon.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production.